שלום חברים, חברות, כאן דני בית אור. תודה על ההקשבה והאזנה לפרק נוסף. הפרק היום הוא פרק באנגלית. הוא הוקלט אתמול וכוון מראש לקהל, הקהל שלנו שחי בארצות הברית ולכן הוא באנגלית, וכמובן הוא עם דובר אנגלית, רוברט שמן. רוברט ואני מכירים כבר למעלה מ-10 שנים. האמת שאני מכיר את רוברט הרבה שנים עוד קודם, עוד שהייתי רואה אותו באירועים בארצות הברית על הבמות הגדולות של אירועי הנדלן לאורך הרבה מאוד שנים האחרונות, ונוצר בינינו קשר של עבודה ושיתוף פעולה לפני כעשור, ומאז רוברט ואני שומרים על קשר ומשתדלים להיפגש ומדברים כל כמה זמן, והפך להיות חבר. כשהוא באזור הוא תמיד דואג להתקן, ואז אנחנו נפגשים לקפה או לארוחה, לפעמים גם עם אשתי, ואם אני באזור בטריטוריה שלו אז אותו דבר, ואם אני, אם הוא באיזה אירוע באזור הוא תמיד דואג להזמין אותי. באמת תענוג, תענוג לדבר עם מישהו מהניסיון שלו והידע שלו והכמות שנים שהוא פועל, תמיד כיף. גם הוא בן אדם נחמד ואוהב לשתף וחיובי, אז בכלל נחמד לנהל איתו שיחה. השיחה היא כמובן באנגלית, והיא מאוד מאוד עדכנית לרוח התקופה, אבל החלטתי שחשוב לשתף אותה גם עם הציבור המאזינים שלנו בפודקאסט הישראלי או הפודקאסט בעברית. למי שלא יודע, יש לנו שני ערוצי פודקאסטים, אחד בעברית, זה פה, והשני באנגלית. התכנים מאוד דומים, אם כי הרבה פעמים הם עם קצת טון או קצת רלוונטיות לקהל המאזינים, שבעברית בעיקר מדבר למשקיעים שחיים בישראל, למרות שאני יודע שיש גם משקיעים שחיים בארצות הברית ובמקומות אחרים שמאזינים, ומן הסתם באנגלית מכוון למשקיעים שחיים בארצות הברית. אבל הפרק טוב, הפרק רלוונטי, הפרק לעניין, כיף לדבר עם רוברט, כיף לשמוע מה יש לו להגיד, כיף לשתף כרגיל, ולכן חשבתי שהוא יהיה גם ערך מוסף למי שמאזין רק לפודקאסט בעברית, ואני מקווה שהאנגלית לא מאתגרת מדי, אני מניח שלא. אז תודה על ההאזנה, ותיהנו מהפרק, להתראות. נזכרתי, עוד דבר אחד קטן. במהלך יוני וחלק מיולי, קיץ 2023, אני מגיע לביקור, ביקור שנתי בישראל, משפחה, חברים, חגיגות וכדומה. תמיד שאני מגיע לביקור, יוצא שאני מרצה ומוזמן להרצות לפחות פעם, פעמיים או שלוש, וגם משתדל לערוך יום או יומיים של פגישות אחד על אחד עם משקיעים שמעוניינים להבין קצת יותר טוב איך להשקיע, איפה להשקיע, ואיך אנחנו יכולים לעזור לכם, למי שמעוניין. אם אתם לא על רשימת התפוצה שלנו, אני מזמין להירשם. פשוט לשים את השם ברשימת תפוצה, כי נוציא עדכונים לגבי אירועים כאלו ואחרים, פגישות, ימי פגישות מרוכזים כאלו ואחרים, במהלך התקופה שאני בישראל. מוזמנים להירשם, מוזמנים להדיע לחברים או מכרים, שחיים בישראל, שיהיו יכולים ליהנות גם ההזדמנות להיפגש פנים אל פנים, וגם כמובן מהרצאה זו אחרת שמתוכננת ברגעים אלו לתקופה שאני מגיע לישראל. תודה רבה. Take it from there, sounds good? Perfect. Excellent. All right. Well, good evening, everyone. Good evening for those who are attending at the live. This is a live event. It's not a pre-recorded. However, we are recording it. So we know very well that there's many more who will listen to the recording online on YouTube or on our podcast channel. My name is Danny Bait-Or. I'm the founder and CEO of Simply Do It. We are a real estate investment company. We help investors invest in real estate. And I am based in Southern California in Orange County, been helping investors to invest in real estate for about 20 years, And, you know, I stopped counting, but we are somewhere around 5,000 transactions that we've helped over those 20 years. You know, it, I don't know exactly the exact number, mainly single family homes, nice ones, duplexes, triplexes, fourplexes. And we run a network of a lot of local teams in different parts of the country, places like we talked about Kansas City and Nashville, which Robert knows very well. And Birmingham, Alabama, St. Louis, Houston, Dallas, etc. Robert and I are good friends. We've been collaborating, working. Robert, even I hired him as a mentor consultant about 10 years ago. I always said that it took me 9 months to get a meeting with him, but eventually he told me I'll have a half an hour for you, and he stayed 2 hours on the line, which is very common with Robert, that always I've known him for about 10 years. We've been to events together. I was invited a few times to events that he's holding or sponsoring or mentoring, to groups that he mentored. So it's always an honor. I remember clearly in 2017, I was invited to speak to a graduate, to alumni group in Israel. And Robert gave me an intro and introduced me. I started this short, a lecture that I gave class with goosebumps and shivering and tears in my eyes from the warm and so welcoming introduction. So I still remember it, Robert. Thank you for that. That was amazing. We keep in touch whenever we are crossing paths, like in Israel, Orange County, or Vegas, or something. We always try to catch up for dinner, for coffee, whatever. So Robert is a good friend and someone that I enjoy speaking to and catching up with every once in a while. And I called him about a month ago. I said, Robert, let's do something. We gotta help people create some clarity, in today's market. And he, of course, I have no doubt. He was, I said, let's do it. Robert is an author of multiple books. I don't know if all of them or most of them are on the New York Times bestseller. Simple read, easy to connect with read. I really recommend his books. And without further ado, Robert, I'll let you maybe pick up on the introduction. Thanks for making the time while you travel tonight. Always truly a pleasure, my friend.
Yeah. Well, thank you, Danny. It's good to see you. And it's good to be with a good friend. And I'll tell you, in residential real estate and small commercial, it's very hard to find professional people. Would you agree, Danny?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
I mean, it's like any business. And it's an honor to be here with you because I've known you for a long time. And you are one of the most professional, serious investors. You developed a great system and you've taken all over the country and helped a lot of people. And again, thank you. We have 2,400 active Israeli investors besides all my American students who close on 200 to 300 deals a year. And you spoke to them and they're a tough crowd and they loved you. So thank you. You always help us out.
They are.
And that's what it's always about. So, I've been doing real estate since 1994. I'm an active investor and I like, do it. You really do it. I really do it. I've had two closings today. I'm in New York raising money. I'm flying out tonight in 3 hours, which will be 2 or 3 in the morning here back to Colombia. And then doing a presentation in Spanish and closing some deals next week. I'm active in about, I've been like you, I think I've done over 2,000 deals. And Danny, it's amazing. Every time I talk to you, the number gets bigger because you're still buying. And let's talk about the market. Would that be a good thing to do? And then we'd love to take some questions.
Yes, I think that's great. I think the main reason for tonight is kind of try to create some explanation what's going on, some clarity, some maybe suggestions how people can take action or not. I think this is what people are looking for.
So let's get deep tonight, and I'm going to give you some information. I always get new information. I just literally went to an investment banker meeting. There's a fund that wants to give us $7 million. They run $4 billion, mainly real estate and startups. And these are some of the leaders in New York. It was a big party at the university club. And I'll start out with that. The guy got up there and said, hey, everybody, there's a problem and opportunity. The banks are in trouble again. And the banks are not lending that much anymore. Not like they were. Would you agree? I don't know if you do much bank financing. You know, there's always exceptions. But when people ask about the market, Danny, and we'll get deep tonight, I always say, number one, I don't really know. And I'm being very honest because no one can predict the market. And let's just talk about this for 2 minutes. If you or I could predict the markets 100%, we wouldn't be here. We'd be running a $1 trillion hedge fund. And, you know, so who would have thought 6 years ago, hey, in 2 or 3 years, we're all going to be wearing masks. You can't travel. You can't go outside. And then, you know, nobody can really work that much. But the real estate's going to keep going up. Who would have thought that, you know, the pandemic? Number two, a ship crashes somewhere in the Suez Canal, and all of a sudden you can't get cars and you can't get parts, and Target doesn't have things. You can't get building supplies, whatever. There's no containers, the pandemic. Who would have thought that? That construction costs go up 30, 40, 80, 100% in 6 months. I couldn't predict that. So I can't predict where the market's going to do. But what's going on right now? Real simple. Interest rates on a 30-year home loan for a home buyer went from about 2.8, 3.4% to 6.7. What does that mean? Home buyers, they're paying on a $300,000 house, which, you know, you're in California, the average house is 680, I think, you know, average. I think in national now, it's 375, you know, nationally average like 320. So it keeps moving around. So your payment went up. For investors, it was, you know, a few years ago, you go get these hard money loans at 6, 7, 8, 9% for an investor with no experience. Have you seen some of those, Danny? You know, a couple, like 2 years ago, money was everywhere. It was great. You're on mute. And
yes, easy.
Now, yeah, and now the rates are up and they're tightening up. So what's happened? One thing is the Wall Street Journal, not Robert Shemin, says about 30% of the investors have dropped out of the market. Which to me is great because there are a lot of people who go on YouTube, watch a couple of videos or watch my friends on Flip and Flop who I've worked with for years and say, wow, they fixed a house in 25 minutes and they're rehabbed it or renting it and they're making all this money. It looks easy and it's not easy. Would you agree, Danny?
First-hand experience, not easy. Multiple experiences. Absolutely.
And I love real estate. I always do real estate. My main business is buying and holding. And I'll never forget, talk about the market. My mentor was doing this since like 1950. He was worth like $300 million, never graduated high school. I met the guy, you know, in all this real estate. And I said, and every day since 1994, Danny, everyone tells me it's the worst time to buy real estate. Let me repeat that. Every day since 1994, I've been buying real estate almost every week, almost since 1994, maybe a few weeks I was on vacation or something. And every week, people tell me, realtors, family, the newspapers, the government, the bankers say, listen, the economy's too hot right now. Don't buy. Hey, the economy's bad. Don't buy. Hey, there's inflation. Don't buy. Hey, the interest rates went down. They went up. And whatever you're looking for, you'll find a reason to do it. And I went to my mentor the first day, and this is important because, Danny, you mainly buy and rent, right?
Correct.
You don't, and you're smart. And listen, I buy fix and sell. I do a little wholesale and I do commercial. I do residential. But my main business is buying rent. Let me tell you why. I went to my mentor and he said, is now a good time to buy? He goes, Bobby, it's always a good time to buy. And I go, what do you mean? He goes, one, you got to buy it right. You know, you got to make sure the numbers work. And number two, we're not selling next week. We're not selling in 6 months right. or a year.
Yeah.
And when I buy property, people go, well, how long do you want to hold this for? I'm like 200 years, you know, and no joke. When I started, I had a lot of 15-year mortgages. I didn't have any money. So my business, my money partner got the mortgages. Some were 25, some were 30. And I go to people and they say, well, when are you going to sell? I said, well, not for 15 years. You know, I'm going to let my tenants pay the mortgage off. And I didn't expect the market to go up, Danny. I thought I made a mistake. I thought I bought it wrong. Everybody was saying it's going to go down. I'm like, I don't care because I'm making money every month on the cash flow. Now there's some repair months, you know, it's not smooth, that, you know, it's not a perfect month, but over time you should make something every month. Number two, the tax benefits, which no one ever talks about. You know, when I worked at a restaurant, I made 30 grand a year, they took out 30% taxes, you know, like that's just, there's nothing you can do about it. You work for somebody. And my mentor said, just the tax benefits alone, if you qualify with rental and you're active and you get the write-offs and depreciation and interest rate and, you know, we'll are amazing. Number three, over time, the house is going to appreciate. Maybe not this year. Maybe not next year. I can't predict interest rates, world governments, Putin, Ukraine. But over time, what happens in real estate, he goes, the property is going to go up. But better than that, your tenants are paying off your debt if you have debt, which I usually do, but not too much, 60, 70%, you know, 75% tops, and it cash flows, and you're making money every month. And in 10, 15, 20 years, it's an equity farm. And we're not buying the rentals to sell in 4 months or 8 months. And I think I've been through four crashes, and I've still not lost money on real estate because you only make money when you buy. And here's the best thing. You never make money if you never buy. I know people... And then you probably get some, there's probably people on this with us today. I'm glad you're here. You'll learn a lot. We want to take your questions that have probably been looking at real estate for 7 years, waiting for the perfect market, the perfect deal. I know I did. I didn't do anything the first year. I'm waiting for the perfect house, perfect market. And here's the great news. There is no perfect deal and there is no perfect market. The good news is if you do it right, you buy it at a little bit below market. You buy with the cash flows and watch your management maintenance, which is the most challenging part. And over time, you're going to be really happy. Maybe not the first month or every week when the hot water heater breaks or the tenant moves out. There's ups and downs like any business. But if you stick with it, and I want to be very blunt, I bought garbage in Nashville. I bought in the cheapest, like everybody. Every investor starts out, and I like what you did. And you kind of buy nicer areas, nicer properties. You know, you've learned the hard lessons. I bought the worst stuff in the worst neighborhood, the cheapest house I could find because I'm cheap. That's how I was brought up. And it was a slugfest. It was tough. And I go, these properties, you know, they're worth 80. I'm buying them for 50 something. The duplex is the worst part of Nashville. I go, in 15 years, they'll be worth 80. Maybe they're worth a 70. They're never going up. These are bad neighborhoods. And what happened in 5 to 7 years? Whammo. They started going up. Rents go up usually. And it was just unbelievable what happened. But you got to stick with it. You got to get started. And, you know, there are markets, some markets that are better than others for rentals. And I love some of the markets, Danny, you mentioned. You know, when, you know, we travel all over the world. You go to Israel, I go to Israel, Europe. And people always go, they think America is New York, Miami, and Las Vegas. Maybe Los Angeles. Yeah, maybe. And then when you talk about Kansas City or Nashville. Nashville's getting a little famous now because of our soap opera shows and the football team and the music. But you know, they're not the most exciting towns in the world. It's probably not where you want to go vacation for a month, but you can make money there. I call it bread and butter. Is that what you like, Danny?
Absolutely. Hallelujah.
Yep. Yep. And you know, if you're doing high-end properties, which I've done, it's risky. You know, they can go up and down depending on how the market's going, interest rates. You know, if you're doing the really cheapo stuff, which I've done, yeah, it's a slugfest. But if you're doing the bread and butter stuff, you know, even in the last crisis, I was shocked. The bread and butter stuff went up because people that bought houses they couldn't afford had to move into our bread and butter stuff. And the rents went up and the demand. So if you know what you're doing or have someone that knows what they're doing, you know, the risks, there's always risks. You got to understand them. But if you're in it for the long term, I believe if you do it mostly right, even if you make mistakes, and I want to be very, if you don't mind, Danny, just a disaster before we take some questions about the market. You know, when I go to Israel, I love Israel because they want to hear about the worst deal ever. That's the first thing they want. Tell me about the disaster. Tell me about the risk. Tell me what can go wrong. Don't tell me what can go right.
Yeah,
and I bought 420 houses from a builder in Vegas with some partners, and you know this is like 2006 or something or seven, you know,
and perfect timing.
The houses were worth about 350, and we were buying it for 260. Plan A, we're like we're going to buy it. They'll be built in 3 to 8 months. We're going to sell them and make 50, 80, 90 grand a house. You know, net, net, net. We had our numbers done. We triple checked them. We're excited. But mentor said something. Always have plan B. Plan B was, if the market goes down or soft, we're selling, make 30 grand a house, you know, in 4, 5, 6, 7 months. Not great, but not bad. Plan C if the market crashes, which we no way it's going to happen, we're going to rent them. And we knew the rents and our mortgage payments. And guess what happened 7, 8, 9, 10 months later? Nobody saw it coming, not even the market went out 50%. So literally we had bought the house for 260 and they're worth 240. Can't sell them. It was horrible. Yeah. And I went to my partners and said, we got a big problem here. What's plan C? The rent was like 2,200, 1,800. The payments were 13, 14, 15, whatever. We made money every month.
Yeah.
And it was not fun. We didn't want to rent them. And 3 years later, the market started going up. 250, 280, 290, 310, 320. And we went, wow, we're going to sell and make about what we thought we were going to make. We made money. And Danny, it was one of the stupidest things I ever did. Because now they're worth 450 and the rent's like $3,000.
Yeah.
Over time, in rentals, most of the time it's going to work out if you halfway know what you're doing or have someone who knows what they're doing. I believe that.
Yeah.
And every time I sold a property and made money, I thought I was a genius. And 2, 5 years later, I completely regret it.
So much so, including the flips, same here. What was I thinking? Yep. I know exactly what you mean. Yeah. I have similar stories.
Right. So right now, and I'll just give you, we have a hotel because I do mainly residential like you do, you know, houses, duplexes, triplexes. I buy packages, but also do some small apartments and some hotels. We have a great hotel in Porter. We make all your money when you buy it, right? We got about $1 million in it. It's worth $2 million. And we can sell right now for 1.9, 1.8 net, 6 months. Not complaining. We got some partners. Makes a real chunk of money.
Right.
But we can fix it up a little bit, rent it, and on cash flow, net 15, 25 grand a month. And guess what I want to do? I want to keep it.
Keep it.
Forever. Because we know the area. We know it's getting better. We know the rents will go up. We know the whatever. But it's that eternal conflict. Do I want some money now or more money later? And I always like to go, there's nothing like cash flow. Every month the rent comes in pretty much. You know, there's ups and downs, but it's just amazing when you do that. So the markets, what's going on? Inflation, interest rates, a problem. There are being job cuts. So we're going to see some markets that will go down. But here's the weird thing, Danny. There's not much inventory still. And the other thing, people don't want to sell because 3 years ago, they got a 30-year loan at, you know, 4% or if their investor 6% or whatever it is.
3%.
And they don't want to sell because if they sell, they got to get a mortgage at 6 or 7 or 8 or 9, depending if they're a homeowner or investor. So it's a really weird market now. And a lot of markets that I think should go down keep going up.
Yeah.
Florida, Nashville.
Supply and demand is the basic, you know, fundamental force here.
Say it again.
Supply and demand is the most fundamental force that's working.
Yeah. And the last thing is there is no market in real estate. It's not a national market. It's a city by city, neighborhood by neighborhood market. So even Nashville slowed down a little bit, but certain areas keep going up.
Yep.
So, and I'll give you an example. When Ukraine happened, and I'll tell you some secrets that we want to look out. When Nashville's one of the hottest markets, and that's where I'm from. I live in Medellin, Colombia. Last thing that we'll talk about, whatever you want to talk about is, you know, we do some new construction there, some rentals and whatever. The market's hot. Well, 2, 3 years ago, across the street from one of our properties is one of those equipment rental places, the dump trucks and the backhoes, the Caterpillars. And the lot was empty. They had like 100 pieces of machine and you couldn't rent them. There was so much demand and so much building and thinking. And then when all the Ukraine stuff happened, the interest rate happened, people's moods changed. And for a while, the lot was full. People were scared. And now, boom, it's empty again. So we watch things like jobs, new home construction, talk to the postal service, talk to landlords and landladies on the ground to find out what rents are. These are things that I know you do too, we do, to really see what's going on in the market. And it's neighborhood to neighborhood. So you really got to know what you're doing. You can go one area, Nashville or Memphis or St. Louis or Kansas City, and it's great. And then you go a quarter mile away and you can die. And it's not as good. So that's another big myth is which market. And every city has like 20, 30 markets and they don't move the same. And the cities don't move the same. And I'm in shock right now. I live in Miami part of the year. And really the Miami market, it's everyone from New York's moving in. California's moving in. Low taxes, jobs. I don't know what's going on. Tourism. and it just won't go down. Won't slow down. So there is no market. We do deals, not markets. All you got to do is find a deal, correct?
Correct.
Buy it right and manage it right. And Danny, I think the key to rental property is management.
Very true.
You got a bad manager and a great property, you got a bad business. You got an okay property and a great manager, you got a good business.
And you know, I think that this is where a lot of investors, especially beginners, but not just beginners, they fail. They first of all, the concept of passive investing, no
such thing.
No, it doesn't mean full-time job. If you own 4 or 5 properties, 1 property, 10 properties, it does not mean full-time job. You can still do it while you're doing your life, but it's not passive. It's not buy and forget, checkbox, you know, money in the mail, stuff like that. That's total BS, right? But between totally working on your properties and managing them to monitoring or working with a property manager who handles the, you know, most of it, it is a part-time job. It could be small part-time job or more, depending how involved you want to be and also how the property manager is performing, but not passive.
Yep. You know what? I'm so glad you said it because I get those emails every day. Passive investment, never work again. Get a check every month. Not true. I love that you're honest and upfront. Now, I used to manage all my properties. We're very good at it. But there's no money in it. It's no fun. Every phone call is a problem.
Yeah.
So now we find the best managers and we manage the managers. You got to watch
it. Exactly. Yep.
So every Wednesday or once a month, I spend a few hours going over the reports, looking at everything, asking questions, making sure. And I know you might do this. We call a percent of our tenants on quality control. Little things, you know, hey, Bertha, I see that, you know, you got a new window that we just spent, you know, $300 on or something. Like, Bertha's like, I didn't get no window. I'm like, whoa, really? You know, any business you have, you got to check on things a little bit. You got to be a little involved. Absolutely. Even if you own a stock, you got to make sure the company's okay, that, you know, the chairman can get trouble with a scandal or, you know, whatever. You got to watch it. There's no such thing as just forgetting about it for a year. If you do, you will be shocked.
And you know, it's a really good point because I think a lot of investors are scared, not about investing, but about the management, and they feel intimidated, rightfully so conceptually, but there are solutions out there and I can explain, but I think people go through the thinking process, say, wait, I buy it and then what? Some manager, and how would I know, especially if you're done remotely, right? If you're doing it locally, it's a little bit easier, but you would do it remotely. And that's something we tackled many years ago and put checks and balances, systems and processes, buying power as a group. And we eliminated all the problem, but I would say your typical 90% problems, we solve them, right? There are always going to be some issues and friction and misunderstanding and miscommunication, and it will happen. But once you are able to put the right systems and processes in place, and you'll be able to mitigate or offset 90% of the problems, you pretty much solved it.
No, Danny, you said something that I know the group here is pretty smart and advanced, or some, most, I hope. Let me point some out that you mentioned that most people never think about. And I don't know exactly all your business, but like in one city, how many properties do you have a manager managing, for instance, where you got some good power numbers?
Yeah,
you know, because you put this, investors together.
So the smallest one would be probably 50, 60 doors.
Okay.
And the biggest one would be about 200, maybe a little bit over 250 doors.
And let's stop right there and give you a secret of rental property management. And if you have one property with a manager and they're managing 400 houses, they may be the best manager in the world and give you great service, but probably not.
Yeah.
So let me give you an example of this. And I know you do this for your clients. My assistant, Verena, everyone who works with me ends up buying property. She bought a property in Memphis, and we are in Memphis, and I have a bunch of properties. There was a manager that was really good. You've had this happen. And about a year and a half later, they got too big. And then he gave her the check. You know, just silly stuff. They didn't fix something. She was calling them. They're like, oh, we'll send it to you next Monday. They didn't. Well, we have 140 properties with them, like you have doors with whatever.
Right.
And all of a sudden, you make a call.
Yeah.
Or I make a call and say, hey, you're not treating one of our people right. There's a problem here and you need to fix it. And if you don't fix it, next month we're pulling all of our properties out. I don't want to have to say that, and I hope we don't
need to say it. It's a subtext. You don't need to say it. They understand that again, the rules.
If you get this, worth coming for the whole meeting tonight. And all of a sudden, they call Verena, and they, you know, sent her, FedExed her check and gave her a bonus, or like, you know, took good care of her. But if you're like I was, thinking I had, you know, I had two properties or one property by yourself, yeah, they might take good care of you. But that's not the way the world works. There is a power in numbers. About, I think, one of the best benefits of grouping investors together and working together. And also, we turn neighborhoods. And we turn neighborhoods too. So all of a sudden, when you buy 5 or 10 or 30 properties with your group, and you make them pretty nice, you take care of them, which most landlords don't, let's be honest, right? Yep. They didn't buy them right. They don't have the capital to fix them. All of a sudden, that neighborhood gets better. The values go up. People don't think about that. When you do it by yourself, or I'm just a onesie or a twosie out there, you can do it. It's possible. But there's a real safety in numbers. You know, when the Army sends someone, they don't send one person. You know, they send 1,000 or 50,000 or whatever, power of numbers.
True. Very true. Very correct. That's the way we operate and mitigate that challenge with the property manager, with exactly the buying power. Plus, there is a perk, right? When I speak to a property manager, I come with the buying power, I negotiate better fees, right? Better terms, better service. So I ask them, demand, not only that they'll give us a discount, we get more done from them, because that's how we do business. And they're like, of course. There's property managers that I help them improve their business just because they said, I came in and I got involved in their operations. And they say, you know what, we will listen. You work with so many property managers. We want to learn and do better. I have one guy who calls me and say, Danny, I need to make changes in the company. And I'm help like, okay, help. We, and like, why are you calling me? We're good friends. I know why he's calling. He says, well, yeah. I mean, there's some changes. As if I'm not going to get your blessing, it's going to be hard for, for me to make those changes. Yeah. So he called me first to make sure I'm okay with the changes he wants to make in his own company, which is,
Something you're talking about, which people don't pay attention to, which I'm really paying attention to your words because you're a pro, is relationship. That's 80, 90% of getting the deals, getting the business done. Would you agree?
Oh, completely.
Yep. I don't mind telling people, I got up at 3 this morning in Medellin, Colombia, flew to Panama an hour and a half or so, Panama, New York, about 5 hours for a 2-hour meeting. The guy was opening office here who I do business with. And I didn't want to do it. It's 2 days of flying. I'm going to go back at 3 a.m, no sleep. And I went up there and I do business with the guy. He's like, I can't believe you flew all that way to come here just for this meeting. I'm like, yeah, but you're a friend and we do a lot of business together. And he's like, oh my God, this is great. Let me introduce you to this guy. Let me do this. Let me do that. I didn't do it on purpose. I mean, you know, I'm not doing it just to get something, but I always put, and I know you do too, you know, you find a good relationship, whether it's a manager, realtor, contractor. And when you find a good one, we put relationship before money.
You know,
you got to make money.
Yep. You know, it's a good point, because I can tell you that over my career, I fired maybe 4 or 5 clients, maybe 6, not more than that, not a lot, but at least twice. I can remember clearly one of them was because that person treated one of the property manager horribly. And I told him, unacceptable. I spend time, fly, talk, you know, send the present, check on their mom when she's in hospital, you know, follow up, make sure their business is okay. Beyond the regular stuff, and you come in and you piss on those relationships that I put so much time. And I know I'm doing it not because the nice part of me, which is part of it, is because I want to nurture those relationships. And then some guy, client of mine, comes in and he calls the guy a liar, a cheater. Not true, you know, but he's just using those terminology. And I'm like, this guy is not acceptable for me to work with. And the next time he came to buy, I said, sorry, not interested in working with you.
Clients. You know, behind every realtor, bank, lender, contractor, title company, there's a person. And you got to take care of the people. You know, treat them right. Just like we want to be treated right, with respect. Relationship. Robert,
How about we try to do 2 things. Open up for maybe questions. I think people want to talk about maybe specifics or generalities about the current times. Or switch to that, or maybe if we don't see questions coming up, maybe give some tips, suggestions, you know, how to go about, you know, you said long-term, and, you know, long-term was the key here. I you know, 100% agree. I practiced that. Maybe there's, you know, I have few ideas how to navigate current times, but maybe if there's questions, you can unmute yourself if you're able to, or put it in the chat, and I will be gladly, yeah. I will gladly take your question or read it. Beyond, while we're getting this, Robert, beyond long-term, are there other things we should be, you know, the people who are listening to this, so think about today. This is very date relevant. Yes. This is not something that could be the thing. Yeah.
I'll tell you exactly what we're doing. What we talked about, you know, I'm going to when we verify numbers, now we like quadruple verify them, because there's certain markets that are moving. Yep. And you got to be double careful. You know, what is the real value? What are the real rents? I mean, even they're moving around a little bit. This is a weird market. I've not really seen a market like this where, you know, it should be going down a little bit, but it's not. And, you know, there's all these possible problems going on, you know. And, you know, you're going to see some, I think we're not, you know, we have a banking problem. I think 30, 40, 50% of the banks are in trouble. When they don't loan as much, that softens markets. When they get stricter on their lending requirements, like that affects markets. So, you know, if someone tells us a duplex is worth 250 or whatever, for example, we're saying, well, let's take a little reserve, or let's be a little more careful now. And, you know, we always have reserve. We always double check numbers. Now we're quadruple checking. And also, you know, I'm not going for the really expensive stuff, you know, the unique, crazy stuff, which, you know, 2-3 years we'd sell anything, you know, rent anything. Mm-hmm. We're just being more careful, expecting that, you know, there could be a 5-10%, 15% little adjustment. Again, if you're renting, cash flow's good, you know, we're going to be okay.
Yeah,
that's really the only change we made. We're being a little more careful.
So those are really good points. I'd like to add to that maybe two or three things. So first of all, it's okay to try and negotiate with the lenders. So the lenders, sometimes what we see that happens when you go to the lender, you get a quote for the terms. If you go back to that lender, say, listen, before I start shopping around, is there anything better you can do on the terms? On sometimes it's not on the interest necessarily, but maybe on the closing costs or fees that are associated with the mortgage. And by all means, go ahead and shop and compare. So that's one thing that I'm seeing, you know, that could help. The other thing that I am telling our clients is, do not fixate on the 6.5, 7% interest rate right now. Just, you know, sweat it out, you know, wait it out. You know, historically speaking, it is very likely that you will refinance in 2 to 4 years, right? No guarantees, yeah. But very likely.
Yeah.
So,
by the way, thanks for saying that, because that's something that's on people's mind. Oh, interest rates went from, 3 to 6 as a homeowner, from 6 to 9 as an investor, whatever they are, because, you know, they move around a lot depending on what you're doing. And I don't care what interest rates are. I just focus on, can I make money? Yeah. And what you said is so important. That number one, I still think, because I was brought up that if it's under 10%, it's cheap. We just had really cheap interest rates for so long. We're spoiled rotten. Number two is, if interest rates go down a lot, you can refinance in a year, two, or three.
Exactly.
Number two, if
very
they go
likely, it will go.
Right. And let's say worst case scenario. Let's say they go, when I started, they go to 15%. Well, what does that mean for you? That you're a genius because you got the interest rate at a lower rate today. And if interest rates are that high, that means inflation's really high. And what does that mean? Usually your property's gone way up in value, you know, generally. You know, it can move different ways. So people fixate on cost. As an investor, I fixate on profits.
Yeah, true. And the deal is a package. A deal is not a single item. It's not just the age of the house. It's not just the interest rate. It's not just the cash flow. People tend to fixate on one thing. And no. Well, you know, if you're buying a property for that's worth $300,000, and you're able to secure it for $250,000, that $50,000 in equity, it's hard to find, you know, like reverse engineering into your finances, but it's there, right? You can, but it's there. But you're like, oh, the cash flow is horrible. wait, you got $50,000, whatever, $20,000 in equity. How do you compute it in your decision? It's part of it, right? It's not just the cash flow or just the appreciation or one single item. It's always multiple factors.
Yep. Very good point. So we have some questions.
Yes. So the first question, and I'm not sure if it's directed to me or to you, but I'll let you take it.
We'll do it together.
All right. Could you go into more detail about the checks and balances and or process you use?
Now, were they talking about the management or the
I think we
pricing?
Mentioned it earlier with when we were talking
the about the managers.
Selecting either selecting manager or selecting actually properties or choosing properties. I think that was all maybe combined.
Yeah.
Maybe Judy can refine the question. It will be a little bit helpful for us.
I'll take it. I'll start out generally. I know you're a master at this too. Is I always tell people, if you own the McDonald's, right? Whoever, or you own a company, you're the CEO, whether they have one property or 100, somebody's got to check. You know, if I own a McDonald's, the manager or myself has to go in once a month or every couple of weeks, make sure the bathrooms are clean, make sure the parking lot's not destroyed, make sure that they're following the system. Somebody's got to check, because there's only one problem with business, Dan. It's called people, right?
Yeah.
And what's your system? Yeah. What's your system to make sure that the manager or the contractor or the realtor is shooting you straight? And you've got to double check things and dig down deep and say, show me this. Now I'm going to do something really radical. Once a month, we actually send someone to inspect our properties, not the manager, somebody else. We pay him, or we have the manager go by with pictures and videos and checklists. And again, you got to spend time looking at the bills, you know, and digging down. It's not hard to do, just discipline. But you can't just wait a year or two or three and never look at your property, look at the reports, talk to the people, whoever's, you know, doing it, to make sure. And I know you do that for your clients, correct? You've got those systems in place. But somebody's got to do it. You know, somebody's got to check. Buying the property, we go out to other realtors and other people and other landlords who aren't selling us the property and say, hey, are these really the rents? And we, you know, do verify. We believe what people tell us, but we verify. And I think a lot of investors don't do that. Oh, the realtor said it's worth 200. Oh, it's got to be worth 200. Oh, they told me the rents are two, and they're not. Because maybe, I don't think they're bad people. They just may not know that neighborhood or be experts. So we're going to call a couple managers in that area, a couple renters. It's just phone calls, texts, or emails. And most people, I find, Danny, will help you. Have you noticed that? Not everybody.
Yes. Ask and they will help in most cases.
Yep.
You just got to ask.
Yeah. And we do it all the time. People call and say, hey, we're buying the house down the street. We saw your company's managing this or owns that. What are the rents? Oh, it's a great area here, the rents. Watch out over there. Some drug dealers on the corner. You know, it's not as good as it used to be. You know, we tell the truth. Most people do. Not everybody.
Not everybody, for sure. Yeah. I'm very strong or bullish on systems, you know, systems and checklists and systems
checklist.
And processes. So for me, when I onboard a new realtor, there's a checklist and systems and process. When I onboard a new property management, the same thing. When we look at a property, there's a checklist of things we're going to check to make sure, and we teach our clients to do that. So for me, those things, there's almost like a protocol for everything, right?
Yeah.
And the protocol, how to onboard a client. You know, when I onboard a client, there's a clear protocol how we onboard, and we make sure everybody in our ecosystem, the realtor, the property manager, follow that protocol. So there's a lot of those checks and balances and process systems and processes. But I will say one thing that I think a lot of investors do not do, from what I have seen, and I've been working with a lot of them for many years, is a lot of people just decide they want to buy and they sign up to a mailing list and they jump to the water, which is fine. The one thing that when you jump into the water and sign up to 5, 10, whatever list, you're going to be overwhelmed and confused, because sometimes all those emails look beautiful, or sometimes you don't even know to no reference. So my suggestion, or maybe for, you know, a tip for you, and this is, again, something we teach our clients, How about you sit down with yourself tomorrow morning with a coffee, tonight after this with your glass of wine for 5 minutes and write down the what I call the basic criteria parameters. Whatever for you, not for Robert and not for Danny and not for Dave, what is a acceptable or good property in your eyes? Not the best one. What is the threshold? So if you see something that meets that threshold, and I'll give an example, you should definitely consider it. If you see something that it's not meeting that threshold, move on, right? And if it's something exceeds, you go bullish on it. So for example, size of the house, bedrooms, bathrooms, square, you know, square, age, community, schools, garage, yes, no, duplex, fourplex, whatever. So those are just simple things, right? Those are just, I think this is very trivial. What is the price? What is the cash flow you're expecting? What is the ROI you're expecting? Maybe 6, 7, 8 items. You just write them down like a cheat sheet for yourself. And then when you see a property, you're like, all right, this is the property that I'm looking for. This is this one. They're matching or they're close. Or you know what? They're so far apart. Just focus on, you know, move, toss it away. It's okay. You don't have to chase every opportunity and focus on the ones that are qualified for you. Only for you, not your friend, not your cousin, not your, you know, your neighbor's guy, you know, kid who's somebody divesting, you know, so that's really important.
And to always, I'm so glad you said that. I just want to add to that. If you line up 100 of our most successful investors, they'll all tell you something different. I only do 3 bedrooms. They're the best. Oh, I only do duplexes, better cash flow. Right. No. I do apartment buildings. Don't do that other junk. Yeah. And you know, like you said, you got to learn from everybody, but you got to decide what your goals are, what you want to do, and then try it. And if you like it, keep doing it. And if you don't, adjust it.
Change. It's okay to change.
Adjust.
Yeah.
Absolutely. I think what you said, a lot of beginner investors, and I did this, you know, I'm going to buy some property and something good's going to happen. You need a plan, you need a system, and use experts. Don't use your cousin or brother who's a realtor who sold one house in another neighborhood. You need experts who know that neighborhood, know that property, know that area.
You know, it's funny that you say that because every once in a while, it doesn't come often, someone tells me, you know, I want to buy, let's say in Dallas and my cousin lives, you know, somewhere there and can they go and see the house? I was like, listen, first of all, absolutely. They can go and check and see, but be very careful. I don't know where they live. They may come from a really upscale, you know, community. Yeah. And they're coming to a middle class or lower middle class nice area. And they're like, immediately, I would never live here. And you know what? It's okay that they wouldn't live here. They're not our target, renters. Yeah. But if you listen to them, they're not going to give you. So that's such a good point to not use the friend.
Yeah. No, sort of knows the market. By the way, there's Target, there's Cartier, there's Ruth Chris Steakhouse, there's McDonald's. They all make money. You got to decide what kind of market you're going to go into. But I always tell people, I think the internet's a big problem. A lot of my family are doctors. And you know what they say their biggest challenge is? Dr. Google. and I think with real estate, it's fun. They get on some website and look up stuff. And, you know, there's a chance it could be accurate, but 80%, I think, noise.
Yeah.
You know, the 100%. On the comps and the rents. And you really got to dig down. You got to use experts who know that street or that area.
And actually, not your I'll leverage what you said. Move away from the screen. The screen is not going to give you the answers. Talk to the realtor, talk to the property manager, talk to Robert, talk to Danny, talk to people. They'll give you the quality information that the screen will not tell you, right? It's a lot of investors, especially my clients that are very engineer. They're like, this is it. Whatever here, it's the 100% truth. No, it's very big part of it, but it's not the entirety. Yes.
Yeah. By the way, that's a bad neighborhood. The crime statistics on the internet are 100% incorrect. You know that. You know, people I looked it up. The comps are 80% incorrect. So you gotta dig down. Yeah. Hope that helps.
Let's move see. The next question is, Robert, which programs or website do you use to analyze market rents?
You won't believe this. You're not gonna like it. I'd love to hear what your answer is, Danny. It's funny, I was just saying that I don't run comps. And I don't use the internet very much other than do Zooms with my good friend, Danny. And I'll tell you why. Because first comps and rents. If you go to the neighborhoods I buy in and look up comps, you'll be completely confused. You know, I was just looking at comps in Memphis, and one house is 120, 250, 180, 96, 132. What does that mean? Yeah. Well, are you comparing apples to apples? They fixed up, or they not fixed up? Were they bought by investors or homeowners? Number two, rents. You know, rent-a-meter, it's okay. I don't know what you think about it. But what I'm going to do, we have a system. Number one, I'm going to call two or three other rent ads on that street and talk to the landlord or manager. And I'm completely honest. Hey, my name is Ryder. I think I'm buying some houses down the street from you. Will you help me out? Maybe we can do some management stuff. Maybe we can buy and sell stuff together. You know, always got to what's in it for you. Can I help your business? Number two, let's say I go to Rent-A-Meter and it says it's $1,500 a month for this door. And I talked to two landlords and my realtor and property manager swear that I'm going to rent for $1,500. But I talk to people. I don't use the internet. And when the property manager says I can get $1,500 a month rent, listen to my words. I say, teach me, show me, sell me, convince me, prove to me that it's $1,500.
Yes.
What did you rent? Show me the last three things you rented. Well, I haven't rented over there. Well, yep. You're just making the number up. Now, the next thing is, and this is a little secret from our what we call Project X, is I might run a test ad. Now, every little platform's different. You got to follow the rules and laws. Say possible three-bedroom, two-bath Memphis, you know, this area, $1,500 a month. You know, will be renovated, you know, decent area, whatever, like an ad. But listen to the words. I don't have it yet. Possible, coming soon. And if nobody calls or emails me for 5 days and I put on Craigslist and Zillow or wherever I can put it legally, there's a million websites. I have people do this for me. If nobody calls, maybe the market's not that hot. Maybe 1500 is not a good rent. We just did this in Atlanta. We bought an apartment building and everybody said the rent's 1500, 1800. And we put possible coming soon. We didn't own it yet. You know, 1500. We're getting like 18 to 30, you know, emails, calls a day saying, I'll rent it right now. I need it. I got the money. And we'll screen them, and we have the renters before we buy. So we're testing the market with test ads. We do that with sales too. Possible three-bedroom, two-bath, completely rehab, you know, 490,000, California, 2 million, whatever. But we're talking to everybody triple verified. How do you do it with the rents, Danny?
So we go about it differently. So first of all, we don't have the luxury of waiting for an ad or, you know, extensive due diligence. Exactly. We need to get an answer within the hour-ish in order to put the deals together. So first of all, we use a range. We're estimating the lower and the higher range. So we always quote upper rent, lower rent. They're not normally far from each other, maybe $100, $200, maybe $250, $300. So that will give us a little bit, and then we average. Now, in order to get to the upper and lower, we do use multiple, we compile multiple reference points. The traditional comps is one of them. Zillow is another. DealCheck.io, which I think also uses Zillow, so it's the same thing. Rent-O-Meter, I'm a little bit I think I almost always feel that I am getting lower rent than the market, so I'm a little bit concerned about that. So I don't use that much, that much, but I do check. And then that's the reference point that we use. We learn sometimes, not learn, but sometimes if we have a lot of uncertainty, we check with the property managers, and we always know the property manager is going to give us the wrong number. They're always going to give us $100 to $150 less. Property manager in property management school, they are taught to always under promise, over deliver. They don't know the second part. They only know about the under promise. So, but 20 years, without exception, the realtor will quote X. The property manager will quote $100 to $150 less than the realtor. No exception whatsoever. 20 years, you know, wow. Thousands of properties. That's amazing. So, I tell my and the problem is that investors always give the property manager more their opinion counts, not the agent. And what we do is like we go back and when we come to rent and we own the house, we challenge the property manager, say, don't put it 1500, put it 1650. You know what? We may come to 1500, but yours just jumping through. So we have to take the property manager with a little bit, you know, kind of understand where they're coming from. So going back to the analysis, what I like to do is I actually go to Zillow and want to see what's listed for rent in that area and check how long they've been listing and how, you know, good or similar is it. And that will give me, like, that vets the information that I have. I vet it, and I also very little cautious about it, because in Zillow you will find fake ads, you know, yep. Like people put ads that are not in. A lot of the times also when there's some company, especially the big real, you know, property management companies like Nationwide, if you try to rent their house, you know, probably 7 times out of 10, you will go, you'll get nowhere. Nobody's answering the phone, nobody's showing. So houses are sitting there very long for a very lengthy period of time because, you know, those companies are just inefficient. So those are the, how we go about it. And after 20, you know what, let's just look at the past since the crash. Since 2008, this system of verifying works well for us. Not 100%. It's still an opinion. You may end up seeing that the market, or by the time we get to market, you know, it dropped by $100, by $200. That could happen. You gotta take that as a like a possibility, right? It doesn't happen a lot to us, but it does happen every once in a while. So be ready for that. The market will tell, you know, the market will talk in 2 months when we put it on the for rental. Yeah.
Oh wait, you mentioned something that's simple but genius. Every time we buy and fix and sell or buy and rent, we always look at a amount of other available property for rent. So there's 32 other houses on that block for rent. That's going to affect our market if there's not one other one.
Absolutely.
And we're selling, you know, we want a house to sell for $400,000. There's 19 other houses for sale and next door foreclosures. And, you know, so you got to see that what else is available.
Yeah, there's one aspect to that. To what I said, when you're buying, the more saturated the area, like downtown, you know, like the city of St. Louis, the less suburb it is, the more saturated. It's very much block by block, so you can't really look, you know, on Zillow and check half a mile radius, because that could be completely different, you know, neighborhood. So you got to be very careful in the saturated area. When you're in the suburb, there's more, you know, more unity. So with a few neighborhoods down, it's probably similar. Just be aware of that tweak. You can go 10 blocks away in downtown's area, and you can probably go a block or two, you know, if possible. I see there's maybe one last question we're gonna take for tonight, and we'll let you go, Robert, and rest after a long day. The question is, how do you develop your network to be exposed to multifamily commercial properties you want to purchase? I am a new investor. Do we need wads of cash to be ready for such opportunities? Do you follow the question, Robert?
Kind of. I think it's so. It's two parts. So first of all, do you need wads of cash? You know, listen, if you have $5 million in your checking account, there's an apartment building for $3 million, it's pretty easy to buy. And I want to be very blunt about that. But I didn't, when I started, I had no money. So I use money partners. There's funds out there where you give you 60 to 80%, give or take a few points. So I got to go with 20%. I do owner financing, lease option with, you know, sometimes very little money down, but you do need money, either your money partner for reserves, you know, in case there's repairs. Number two, we find apartment buildings just like we find other properties. We call tired landlords. We call property managers, we call foreclosures, auctions, realtors who work with investors, or groups that do, like Danny's group, you know, if that's what you're looking for. So there's really not that much difference. Certain markets for the, and when you say apartment buildings, you know, about 5 units, anything over 4 is multifamily, right? Or you're talking about 300 units. Now, when you get into, like, you know, 150 units plus, in certain areas, you're competing with pension funds and insurance companies and big investors, you know, for 300 units, 500 units. When we're buying, you know, 4 to 20 to 10 to 30, 50 units, maybe we're not competing with the banks and the funds and the, you know, insurance companies, and who can, you know, buy for 5% returns, which we can do. So it just depends what you got to, like Danny said, what are you looking for? And I always use the example of dating. You know, I want a girl, you know, if that's what you're into. Well, that's going to be really hard to find, you know, what kind of girl or guy, you know, what age, what, you know, spiritual, education, family, religion, background, looks, whatever. When you get specific in business, it, like, just like Danny said, things get so much easier. You know, I'm looking for some real estate, Danny. Well, where? I don't know, anywhere in the United States. Well, you can buy an igloo in Alaska. You can buy a mansion in South Beach. You know, there's a $100 million house for sale in Bel Air. You know, there's a crack house in Memphis, you know, for 50 grand. So, and I really, and Danny wasn't kidding. I know this stuff sounds simple. And I love that you meet with people and say, what are your real goals? What do you really want? What kind of money? What kind of property? Because if you're just looking for anything, it gets really hard. Does that make sense?
Good.
Hope that helps a little bit.
Yeah. Robert, what's your latest book? Which one is your the latest one? Is that the
you know, I don't have.
Go ahead, go ahead.
You're gonna love this, Danny. And you're gonna be my third on the list. I redid all my landlording course and books. So I'm gonna do a new landlord book, how to buy and hold property like the pros. That'll probably come in about 6 months. But I'll send you one. I love your input.
I do have your book. It's in the other room. I was just about to look for it, but it's in the other room. Yeah.
Yep. But I've been too busy buying real estate to write books, but I'm going to come out with a couple more in about 6 months. I'll send them to you.
Excellent. Good. Well, Robert, thank you for the time, for the talk. I love that we have those opportunities to talk shop and not necessarily scripted, so we can share those sometimes private conversation that we are having with others and giving them opportunity to question. I want to thank everyone that lasted and survived until this late hour. Thank you for taking the time. For those of you who are watching or listening to the recording, thank you for taking the time. You can always look us up, Danny, at Simply Do It. You can look up Robert and his activities all over. We'll be happy to assist you. Yep.
Great. And I always tell people, if you don't mind, two things, Danny. One is, and I know you do this for your clients, don't wait to buy real estate. Buy real estate and wait.
Yeah.
That's one of our themes. It's always the best time. Check now. We get some new stuff at realprop.io. It's another company I have, realprop, R-E-A-L-P-R-O-P.io, or robertshemin.com. Some free videos and stuff. If you're interested, we always like to give people free stuff, good stuff. And Danny, congratulations on your success. Help a lot of great people out there get great real estate. I see your deals. They're really nice. And it's always good to see you.
Always a pleasure, my friend. And I guess we'll try to connect on the 5th or 6th in Israel, in Tel Aviv.
That'll be great.
That'll be terrific.
And everybody, happy investing.
Happy investing, everyone. Thank you, Robert. Thank you, everyone. Thank you for the questions. And hopefully we'll see you soon. Bye-bye.
Good night. As we say in Nashville, Laila Tov.
Bye-bye, everyone. Thank you.